Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening, and thanks for being with us tonight. My guest this evening is Christine Pierce from Arizona, who does some very interesting work with the very sensitive children, psychic children that are being born these days. And we'll be talking to Christine in just a minute. But first, this week's metaphysical moment. I repeat over and over again, everything is energy. Everything is connected. Everything is conscious or intelligent, and everything is interactive. So let's talk a minute about everything is interactive. What I want to introduce people to on this show is the idea of how someone who studies metaphysics or someone who's a shaman, how do you live in the world when you have that different perspective? And one of the things is having a sense that you can talk to everything, and that it will respond to you and sometimes respond to you in a way that's very much like speaking or talking to anybody. Now, some of that could be telepathic, and it occasionally is for those of us that have those kinds of conversations. But frequently, it's much more than telepathic. So I had an aunt who talked to everything as if it was alive. She talked to her toaster. She talked to the animals around her. She talked to the television. She talked to everything. And I basically thought she was a crazy old lady. And in some ways, she was. But I think she was really onto something. Because she understood on a really deep level that that interaction was changing the way events were happening in her life. So one of the things that was taught to me by the Cherokee medicine man that I studied with, the Kidwa. I was living in a little cabin on the back end of a horse ranch in Northern California, and I used to go for a run every morning. And I had to climb up to the top of a ridge, and I would run along that ridge, which was up above a winery. It was all an orchard. And as I got to the top of the ridge, I could see a grove of trees. They didn't have anything to do with the winery. They were just up at the top of the ridge. And I noticed that as I got up to the top of the ridge, the trees would rustle their leaves. Hadn't been happening before I got there, but every time I got close to them, trees would rustle their leaves. So I went and talked to the Kidwa and said, you know, what's the story with this? He said, oh, yeah, the trees will talk to you. The wind is the voice of the trees. Once you start paying attention, he said, go to the grove of trees and find the grandmother tree. That was the first tree planted there that seeded every other tree that's in that grove. And go and honor grandmother. Thank her for paying attention to you and for giving her wisdom. And leave a gift if you can. But just tell them that you love them and that every time you come by, you'll talk to them. So I did that little ceremony the next time I ran past. And every single morning, as my head came above that ridge, the wind would shift and those trees would rustle their leaves until I passed them. And if I spoke to them, the rustling would get faster. And I found that I can have that kind of kind of communication with trees all the time. When you think about it, a tree is not just the tree. The tree can't exist without the earth and the roots in the earth and all the nutrients and the water that it gets from the earth. The wind is not only the voice of the trees, but it's what prunes the trees and takes care of all kinds of other things for it. So the tree is a whole interrelated community of things that we look at with our limited point of view and say it's the tree, it's the branches, and it's the trunk, and it's that part of it. No, the tree is much larger than that, and it's conscious. We all know people whose dogs know that their owner is going to be home before the car door slams, before anything else. The dog is at the door wagging its tail. something happens to the owner, that dog knows what's going on. You can have a long conversation with lots of different animals, and they will pay attention, and they will respond to it. So my suggestion, and, you know, for some of you, you're going to listen to this and go, oh, yeah, this is another crazy thing that David says. But for other people, you'll start getting curious, and maybe you'll start looking for a response when you talk to things, and that response might be a knock in the wall after you ask a question. Just for no reason, there's a knock or a creak or a car horn outside or any other noise. Neighbor slams their door. But it happens exactly when you ask the question. After a while, after you notice that that happens over and over again, you start to realize those are some kind of response. Or you ask a question and you pass a sign that has an answer for you. Where the truck that pulls in front of you has a message on the back door of the truck. So the universe is much more interactive than most people ever attempt to play with. And once you start doing that, it gets really interesting. So that's today's metaphysical moment. And now let's talk to Christine Pierce, who has an incredible life story and is doing some incredible work with Indigo and Crystal Children. So, Christine, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I started my morning literally chasing a white rabbit down the road, and now I'm going down the rabbit hole with you on the radio.
Yeah, I'm famous for going down the rabbit hole. But your life has been pretty much down the rabbit hole, too, from what you told me. So
really
you had a childhood which most people would consider unusual in terms of your childhood experience, and that led you down a whole path now that's very different than a lot of people. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
For me, it wasn't unusual because it was me. I wasn't really interactive with other kids very much. I was more in tune with adults, and I spent a lot of time alone. I was not raised with a particular religious dogma. I was told at a very young age, you find your own way, your own beliefs, and how you feel as far as what your religious ideas are. And I never had any doubts about a creator, and I remember being very young, having conversations with God, standing in my crib and talking to God. As I was getting a little older, 3 and 4 and 5 years old, I would have dreams before things would happen, especially if it had to do with something or someone that I loved. And I remember warning my mother a couple times about something happening to pets, and, you know, it was just the rantings of a kid, and nobody listens, and of course, things happen to the pets. Wasn't listened to. You know, kids weren't listened to about things like that back then, and it's all in your imagination. And, I grew up just kind of not thinking a whole lot about it, but knowing that if I had dreams, pay attention to it. I was always confident in my dreams because they were always clear. I would know if boyfriends were going to break up with me when I was a teenager, which never bode well for them. Always good with following my gut instincts. And as an adult, I had a period where I had a little spiritual crisis and wasn't believing in anything, and everything just kind of fell apart. And I was driving down the road and just talking to God, saying, you know, I really haven't talked to you in a while. I don't know what to do. I'm going to be on the street. Everything's going wrong. I need a sign. And I'm driving down the road, and I look to the left, and there's a big sign that says, become a nurse, start January 3rd. So I pulled it into the parking lot.
I love that.
And I went and I signed up, and thus began my nursing career, which I did not have a clue how that would lead me to where I am today. I had two very young children when I just started that, and as soon as I started working in the hospitals, I started noticing the energies of the people, especially those that were getting ready to pass away. And if I was alone with them, I would, you know, I would be able to go through the energy system and feel like, you know, if they were just hanging on, and I would start having conversation just kind of telepathically with them and just start easing the transition. And nine times out of ten, within 2 hours after this, they would pass. So, you know, it was a matter of just making it okay for them to go. And I'm like, huh, well, that's kind of a weird talent, if you can call it that, to have. But, okay, you know, they're willingly letting go and not suffering anymore. That's great. But 10 years of nursing, I got burnt out on not being able to spend as much time on the spiritual side of things and dealing with so many things going on with my kids. And my youngest, especially with some very odd things going on with her, that I stepped out of nursing and started paying attention to what I had initially interpreted as a possible mental illness. And that's what set me on the road to dig deeper and find out more. It's just been an amazing journey since she was 7 years old. She's 12 now. The oldest is 16. Both of them are gifted in their own ways. But the youngest was constantly seeing things that terrified her, and she was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and schizophrenia and obsessive compulsive disorder. And then when they diagnosed her with all of this, of course, she got really depressed because something was suddenly wrong with her. They tried medicating her, and then she started having dreams about me poisoning her with the little blue pills, and right, having my own faith in what dreams tell you, it was like, oh, that's it. You're not taking those anymore. And psychiatry did not approve. But, you know, gut instinct said, no, I can't do this with her. And at that point, I was on my own with the kids in Florida, no family around. So we picked up and we moved into the wild, wild west out here in the heat of Arizona, and took some time to really refocus. And I started really doing a lot of studying on psychic children and indigo kids and crystal kids. And I started seeing the patterns that I was reading about going on with her and realizing that they had went on early with my oldest one, and I just didn't pay attention. I was so wrapped up in trying to live a normal life at that time, I didn't pay attention. And we had been through counseling and everything, and once it got to the point where she just was so depressed and wanting to hurt herself, I took her aside one day and sat down, and I said, you know what, Mackenzie, there's nothing wrong with you. You don't need to see any of these people anymore. There is nothing wrong with you. I made a mistake. I didn't realize and was having a hard time admitting to myself what was real. And sometimes what is real to the whole rest of the world and what's real to you or real to me isn't going to be the same, because we can't always see things the same way. You can see things in a special way that other people aren't seeing. So I started by just making a little Facebook page, and then suddenly kids started coming to me saying, you know, I'm going through this too. And actually, she made a best friend out of this who was going through the exact same thing. They're a year apart. Mm-hmm. and couldn't tell anybody about it. And I realized that, okay, there's a need out there. These kids can't talk to their parents. There are less parents that quiet their kids' imaginations, so to speak, down now, but there's still, you know, if they come and they say, I'm afraid because there's a ghost in my room, they still get that there's no such thing as ghost story, just to calm their fears, but that doesn't make it go away. And so we start working, and I try to bring them together in small groups so they can work together and bounce off what they're experiencing from each other. You know, see if they're perceiving the same things. That gives them some empowerment and a little less of the feeling like they're crazy because somebody else is also experiencing something similar.
Right.
And it's turned into just a really beautiful thing for these kids.
Well, it's fantastic that you were able to follow, first of all, support your kid, but also come up with a way to help lots of other people.
Yeah, coming up with the way has been interesting because, honestly, this was I thought that I was going from nursing into hypnotherapy, and no matter how much I've tried to go do something with adults, I keep being brought children and parents of children that need this help. So I'm just following the proverbial yellow brick road where it leads me right now, and I keep being led to these children and to their families and trying to, you know, open them up, teach the children how to deal with their gifts, to accept them and embrace them, how to protect themselves from some of the dark things that come around, how to empower themselves to feel brave enough to protect themselves and set mm-hmm. boundaries, and teaching the parents to, if they can't bring themselves to understand it or believe it, to at least support it, if nothing else, just to support it and allow them to go through their process.
What are the across and been able to work with?
I'm sorry?
What are the youngest children that you've been able
to... Actually, the youngest one that I worked with was very brief, and it was just an issue of him being very frightened about what was going on in his room, and he was about 6 months old. And he was very clearly seeing what was going on in his room around him. And it was through my own intuition that I've worked on developing over the years with dealing with all of this, that you just start opening up. It, you know, I was able to find out what was in there, and it was someone harmless, but it was someone unfamiliar to him.
Right.
And it scared him when he was seeing this older gentleman in his room. So, you know, I had a talk with the older gentleman, and he willingly left when he realized that it was causing a problem. And
right.
Then the house was peaceful. You know, there was no more crying. There was no more throwing up every time he went into his bedroom to be put to bed. He was just very clearly aware.
Right. Right. I've worked with not kids that young, but with pre-verbal toddlers, where they could sort of make it known that there was something going on, but they couldn't explain what it was. And it's really challenging when the kid can't talk yet. You know, as it develops and the kid can explain what's going on, it gets easier. The other thing that I've done with a family where the kids can see and the parents can't see is introduce them to dowsing. You know, typically using a pendulum, but there are other methods of asking questions, and the parents aren't intuitive, they're not psychic, so they're not able to get the answers directly, But dowsing uses a biofeedback mechanism that accesses that same intuitive part of your brain, going through your body, through your arm, and, you know, allowing the pendulum to talk for you. It's very similar to applied kinesiology, muscle testing.
Yes.
That's a form of dowsing. It's a way of getting yes and no answers from the body. So when I taught, there's information online and it's easy to learn. When I taught the parents how to douse and gave them a list of questions to ask, they could say, okay, is this a ghost? Is this, you know, an elemental? Is it a fairy? Is it an alien? Is it, you know, a whole list of things that it could be? And then have a communication supporting the kid. Oh, the guys you say are the red ones are this. And they started to be able to have the same language. And they started to be able to know what was going on. It was pretty funny. There's this one family where both kids are very psychic. But the younger one, who is really feisty, is extremely clairvoyant. She would say things like, the red guy, he just walked through the wall. And the parents knew she was right.
Right.
But just really strange stuff if you're not used to thinking in those terms and knowing that there are red guys that walk through walls.
Oh, I know. You know, what's normal in my house and normal in another house would not be the same. It's for my youngest to walk in the living room and say, there's this creepy girl who will not leave me alone in my room, and I really just want her to leave. It's not, it's just not an unusual thing. You know, there's a group of this is a preteen talking. There's a group of freaky dudes standing by the back door, Mom. I really don't want them in the hallway anymore.
Right.
So, in my house, that's normal.
That's why I called this show Where the Unusual is Normal. And that's the point, you know, for people. I talk about this as the difference between AM radio and a broadband radio that picks up every single kind of radio broadcast there is. If all you have is AM radio, you get a lot of static, it's hard to tune in, and you get weird talk shows and country music, but not much else. But if you have FM radio, you can get every kind of music. If you have the police band, you can find out what's going on with all the emergency crews. If you have if you tune into a cell phone band, you hear cell phone conversations. If you tune into military stuff, you know, all of that stuff is going on around us all the time. But if you don't have a receiver to pick it up, all you get is what you have a receiver for. And you think that's all that's there. You don't know that there's anything else that's there, even though it's right there going through the space that you're in. And it's exactly the same with being broadband in terms of, I call them expanded senses, not extra senses. It's actually an expansion on the physical senses. They've actually done brain scans that show that when people who are clairaudient, people that hear voices, supposedly, you know, when you hear that voice, it's processed in the brain exactly the same way as the voice of a living person or music. It's not processed as something else, and then you make it up. It's an incoming signal just like a voice. So there's a lot of confirmation for this stuff in terms of science and brain studies. But, of course, most people don't know about it because they think it can't possibly be true. So.
Not possible. What I find is interesting, and I don't know why it should amaze me, because I found that as a nurse, I always found that children were always more resilient than adults. And it seems to be the same thing with, as the psychic senses open up more, children end up, once they understand it, and they realize, okay, somebody believes them, they're not crazy, and this is what it is. Oh, and it's just kind of an okay thing. But
right.
With adults, it takes so much longer to get past the fear of what they're seeing.
Right. Well, let's hold this thought, because we're going to have to go to commercial. And
okay.
we're also going to announce the phone number for people to call in if they'd like to ask questions and have a conversation with us here on Empower Radio. We'll be back in a minute.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi.
There's just something about being outdoors.
My family camps. We love it.
Eat, sleep, fish. That's me.
I like climbing the trees in our yard.
I can't imagine not having these woods.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Sassy!
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny! Playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh boy, a kitty cat.
Sassy, the kitty cat's yelling. What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters?
This bobcat's heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas.
That number is 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. So, Christine, we were talking about how much harder it is for adults when they run into an intuitive opening or a psychic opening or whatever you would like to call it. I'd like to hear more about what you've run into, but I think pretty much anybody who goes down this path that didn't have your experience as a child goes through some period where they think they're going crazy.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, my biggest encouragement every time I come across one of them is to, you know, connect them with somebody else who's going through it at the same time so that they have some of, it's almost like one of the recovery programs where you have a buddy to call.
Right.
To deal with those hard moments, especially when it's the middle of the night, you're alone, and, you know, there's someone standing in front of you that shouldn't be there.
Right. I know for me, and this was a long time ago, you know, it was long enough ago that there wasn't a yoga center on every street corner, and lots of conversation about meditation and psychic stuff everywhere, and before access to all the information we have on the internet. So I was studying yoga with a very good teacher because I had some aches and pains, and I was told that it would help. And she kept saying I should meditate. So I started meditating, and almost immediately I started seeing all kinds of things which at the very least didn't make any sense in my experience. And, you know, I knew I wasn't crazy, but I also knew that this stuff wasn't within the realm of normal as it had been defined for me. And it took a while, but one of the things you learn on this path is you have to ask. You have to ask for help, and you have to ask for someone that can explain things to you and teach you. And I did find people who could explain what was going on and that it was totally normal. For the subset of normal of people who are having that kind of opening. There was Stanislav Grof and his wife, whose name I'm not remembering at the moment, for a while did a whole body of work about what they called spiritual emergency, which they eventually called spiritual emergence, which was supporting people going through this spiritual opening into being aware of things that other people are not aware of, going from AM to broadband. And rather than having them fall into psychological, you know, psychiatric diagnosis and being treated with medications and being told they're crazy, giving them a supportive place to have the experience with people who have already had that experience so that they could work it out and figure it out. So, you know, the quote-unquote problem, which is not really a problem unless you get caught up in it being bad, in many ways is that there isn't a traditional – we're no longer in a traditional culture where when somebody is going through that, everyone in the village goes, oh, that's happening to him. We better take him to the medicine man, shaman, wise woman, whoever it was in the village that was known to know about that stuff. And typically that person either would stabilize and go on their life with different awareness or would become an apprentice to that wise person. So we've lost that in many ways. You know, and people like you, people like me are creating a new tradition of how to support people. Using the internet and other things as ways to communicate. But, you know, most people are hitting this stuff by themselves, not having any idea what's going on. And it's
freaky. They are. And I guess the scariest thing for me is to have more children go. I'm not a person that regrets things. I know everything happens for a reason. And my lesson with my youngest, with going through the medication and everything, mm-hmm. Well, a lot of people, but it's now my biggest pet peeve. Don't immediately go to mental illness. What are the other possibilities? And keeping an open mind to possibilities.
Well, in all fairness, there's a balance. You know, if you have a teenager who suddenly is becoming suicidal, and you're trying to sort out what's going on, is it inappropriate for them to be medicated so that they're not dangerous? I don't know. Depends on the circumstances.
Right.
One of my best friends on the planet was going through all kinds of stress and had a problem with the very gentle medications that he was on not working for him, and was in psych hospitals twice. Mm-hmm. While they sorted it out and he calmed down. If that wasn't available to him, he would have been in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
You know, there are times when it's the right thing. Is it the long-term solution? Probably not. Almost ever.
I don't discount the need for psychology and psychiatry in certain cases. My issue is with it being, here's an instance. I had my daughter in a public school about two years ago. And, of course, was normal in our house and not normal every place else. Something came up at the school, and she got brought into the counselor to talk about it, and she had brought up about, you know, the extra people she was seeing in the classroom, and some of them were a little bit frightening, and she was very much talked down to by the counselor about her overactive imagination, and, you know, it was, instead of having an open mind about what are the other possibilities, it immediately became something else. There wasn't the possibility for it being a psychic experience, an open experience. And psychologists automatically assume it was mental illness. There is mental illness. I know that. I've experienced it with many patients. So, you know, there is a, you can look in a person's eyes and see when there's something different. But it's just not always the case.
It's there's so many things to say about this.
I know. And it's a tough call. It's a tough call, especially as a parent. Which way do you go? You want to protect your child, but you also don't want.
And it's also how the child integrates it. So, my daughter, when she was 9 and 10 years old, suddenly had all kinds of abilities, and, you know, I was already divorced, but her mom basically said, "Oh, you got to see what she's doing now," and knowing what I do and knowing that I would pick up on it. And so we worked with it for a couple of years, and then she hit adolescence and, you know, just wants to be a normal kid. So I hope at some point she'll focus on it again. But then there was the day when she was in middle school, where the bathroom in the basement by the choir room suddenly was haunted. The doors of the stalls were moving by themselves. Kids were seeing things moving in the mirrors. There was a strange noise in the room. And her friends called her, said, "You got to look in the bathroom. What's going on here?" And she basically stuck her head in, felt the energy, looked around and went, "Oh, yeah, I better tell Dad." And, you know, so I wouldn't let her get away with having me fix it. We sat down at home, since I work remotely, and we did it together. And the next day, everybody went, "Oh, my goodness, it's gone. Your dad so rocks." You know, I was a rock star for 15 seconds in kid time. But it was a different kind of thing. It was the kids knew about me. Knew that I did strange stuff, but it worked. Knew that she did some strange stuff, but she wasn't weird. You know, there was kind of a balance to it. And I still have some of her close friends will text me and say, you know, "Could you help me out here? Because it's kind of weird." You know, on the other hand, I'm the weirdest dad you could possibly have.
I do strange stuff.
I do really strange stuff that a lot of people turn their noses up to and think are either impossible or I'm a charlatan or, you know, whatever it is that they do to avoid considering that, one, it's possible, and two, I have a thriving practice and a lot of people that I help and testimonials on the website. So, you know, people will do a lot to maintain their sense of what's real and what's not real.
They will. It was another reason that I ended up having to move Mackenzie out of public school, because the community that we're in is much more traditional than what we're accustomed to, and she confided in her best friend, and word got out, and it just didn't go over well with parents and with some of the other couple of the other kids, and it just really kind of broke her heart a little bit that there was such a lack of understanding, especially when the other little girl that she had confided in had brought up her own experiences, but she didn't want to be the weird kid, so she pointed a finger at another right. one, you know.
Right.
You know how little girls can be sometimes.
Right, right. Well, and it's also self-protective when you realize that the adults are not going to treat you in a way that's safe because they're afraid. And there's a lot of fear in several traditions around anything paranormal. It gets, you know, there are a lot of beliefs about it that have been around for 1,000 years or more. That are very fear-based and not based in knowledge of the situation. And it's basically the perspective of all of it's bad, I'm going to push it all away, because that's safer than considering that any of it might be okay.
Right.
And fear is a very dangerous thing. Fearful people do very strange and dangerous things. Which is why politicians and marketing and everything else do everything they can to make people afraid. So, we have got a caller.
Oh, my goodness.
We've got Mike from Chandler, Arizona.
Oh, great.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. We got so involved in the conversation, I wasn't looking at my prompt here to see that you were on the line. I hope you didn't have to wait long.
No, that's okay. I'm fine. Thank you.
So what would you like to talk about? You have a question?
Well, I do have a question. I have my daughter. She's almost 3 years old. What signs would I be looking for? Because, I mean, she's not running around scared or anything like that, but she's just constantly looking. You just see her looking in the in-between and kind of pointing and laughing and stuff. So what kind of signs am I looking for? That sounds like something right there, but what can I do to help foster her at such a young age?
Well, ask her what she's seeing.
Okay.
You know, validate what she's seeing. Have her tell you. One of the things about that is as she talks to you, you're going to start tuning into what she points at and looks at. And actually, do you have pets in the house as well?
There's a dog, yes.
There's a dog. And how does the dog respond to whatever it is she's looking at?
You know, that's a good question. My daughter doesn't live at home with me at this time.
Okay, so you're not seeing them together. Because dogs not all of them. Dogs are not as psychic as cats are. I think all cats are psychic. Some dogs are. Dogs will typically either be curious or protect someone from something that they see. Cats will typically play with them. but it's a confirmation, you know, that there's someone else that can see that seeing the same thing that the child is. If she's not afraid of them, then just get her to tell you the story.
Okay.
And you'll start being able to figure out what's going on. It could be ghosts, and frequently it's ghost children. It could be what are called elementals, things like fairies.
Right.
Who are very playful and love to find a little kid that's full of energy that has a physical body that they can play with. And there are some scary things, but it doesn't sound like she's running into scary things.
No, not at all. It just seems it's a supportive thing. I just want to be a good dad and kind of help foster her ability.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the things is go to my website, househealing.com,
okay,
and bookmark that so you can find me. Christine will give you information on how to contact her, and she's closer to you, actually, because she's in Arizona. And as things come up, if it feels like time where you need some support, that's, you know, there's support around. The other thing is, if you'd like to learn about dowsing, which I mentioned earlier, contact me on my website, and I'll give you the link to a very simple lesson online on how to do basic dowsing. And that gives you a way to ask questions and start having a channel of communication about what's going on as well. Christine, what are your thoughts?
You know, my biggest thing is to just as she is talking more and as she's growing, the stories is, that's a big key. And what sometimes sounds like fantasy stories, they can take some wild trips with their guides and their guardian angels and go to some fantastic places, which sound completely imaginary and made up, but when they experience it over and over and for years, it's the same people taking them to these places, you start to realize that something's really going on.
Yeah.
But don't discourage it. You know, the longer they stay connected to it, the better connected they'll be as an adult. So honor her experiences and honor her imagination and, you know, just embrace the fact that she's still open.
You know, the other thing, Mike, is look for things that feel like they're not safe. So if she's scared or she talks about somebody telling her to do something dangerous or trying to control her, that's a heads up that it may be a being that's trying to manipulate her and that it could be a problem. And then you need someone like me to check in and make sure it isn't a problem.
Okay, good. All right, well, thank you both very much and blessings to you both.
Well, and thanks for being our first caller on the show.
Take care.
Thanks so much, Mike.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's much more common than most people realize, because if you're not looking for it, or if your belief is that it's just imagination, and it always amuses me that people put just in front of imagination. You know, Albert Einstein said that imagination is everything. It's the previews of life's coming attractions. All of his basic discoveries came out of what he called thought experiments, which essentially was going into an alpha state and asking a question and meditating on it in a very open state and watching whatever came into his mind. And that's how he figured out all the stuff that he learned about light and the speed of light and everything else came out of a thought experiment he did when he was 16. So just imagination? I don't think so. It's never just imagination.
No, and I think imagination is, well, I mean, being a hypnotherapist as well and using metaphors with things, your imagination is, it's one of the most powerful tools that you have, not only as a reception, but as a power to create what goes on around you. You know,
exactly.
We are creators of our reality.
Absolutely. A whole other conversation that we could have is that's another show. We've got about 8 minutes left, and one of the things I want to make sure that we do is give people the way to get in touch with you. I mean, we ran into each other on Facebook because we follow some of the same people and got into some conversations and realized we did similar work. And that's a wonderful community if you find the right people to hang out with. But how can people get in touch with you?
You know, they can get me on Facebook. I just kind of moved over a page and restarted a new one because the other page was getting overloaded. So it's Christine Pierce, Intuitive Kids.
Okay, and Pierce is spelled. And Pierce is spelled.
P-I-E-R-C-E.
Mm-hmm. Christine Pierce, Intuitive Kids.
Or they can go to my website, which will email me directly.
Mm-hmm, which is?
And that's vialucis.com, which is VIA-LUCIS.com. And there's a contact form on there. It also gives them an opportunity to take a look at me and decide whether or not they feel safe trusting me with their packages.
Right, exactly. And, you know, part of where our work overlaps is you work directly with the kids and supporting them and giving them a sense that for many people, what they're experiencing is very common. It's not normal because most people don't experience it, and that's what normal means. But that there is a fairly large group of people that have that experience, and it's just not widely known. My work is more helping people that are having those problems and other problems, whether it's hauntings or monsters in the closet is one that I've gotten a lot, and other things, because I do clearing work. So I'm kind of the emergency Mr. Fix-It. Sometimes I say I'm a toxic waste mitigation specialist for psychic toxic waste. So different modalities, different ways of working with the situation.
All right. I do some clearing work, but, you know, there are some. I always wanted to believe everything was all light and love, but I did outgrow that and come into the reality that there are darker things out there. There are some things that, you know, I've been working at this for a long time, but not as long as you, and there are some things that I know that I can't clear. This one's beyond me. So, you know, they get referred to one of just a handful of people that I know could take care of this. And, of course, you're on my list of people I refer to when it's something that I know that I can't take care of.
Yep.
So you have to, when doing this work, know your limits and not get in over your head.
Right. And it's definitely don't try this at home, boys and girls, kind of stuff, because when you get into some of those darker energies, you need to know what you're doing. And I always tell people it's something you learn by apprenticing, not by going out and trying it yourself. Because it can be dangerous.
Yeah, my first experience with it was a try it yourself, and I was sick for a long time. Really sick for a long time after that.
Yeah, you can get sick. People have gotten hurt, you know, knocked against walls, thrown downstairs. You know, and I'm sure there are people listening to this that go, what? How in the world would that happen? Which is a whole other conversation about, you know, what ghosts can do and what other entities can do interacting with our physical world. But it's definitely something to, if you want to learn it, find somebody who's really good at it and do it with them, so that, number one, you know, you've got a lifeguard. You're not in the deep end of the pool by yourself. And number two, you've got somebody who can talk you through it and say, oh, as somebody said to me, a wise woman said, oh, don't do it that way, honey. You'll get hurt. You need people around that know when you're going to get hurt and how to do it correctly.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, some of the ghost hunting shows show things that are very dangerous and make it seem like there are no dangers to it, and encourage people to just go out and look for things to mess with. And that's not necessarily a good idea.
Yeah, no. They taunt them. Not a great idea.
Yep. So this has been lovely. I'm so glad we did this.
So
wonderful hearing more about your work and more about, you know, how you got here, which is a lot of what I like doing on the Farkas Files, is having people tell what the path has been, how they got here, and, you know, what the process is, that you don't just suddenly wake up this way. So until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files here on Empower Radio. See you next Thursday at 9 o'clock.